Hi, welcome back to Bullet Points. Today, I'm speaking with Margot Hirsch, president of the Smart Tech Challenges Foundation, a nonprofit that has funded the research and development of smart firearms technology. Hirsch presented on behalf of Smart Tech at the White House, at the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and at Women Against Gun Violence. She has appeared on numerous national publications and interviews, including Forbes, Fortune, CNN, and Fox News. Thank you so much for being with us today, Margot.
Thanks for having me, Sebastian.
So just to start off generally, can you define what a smart gun is and then what the two main kinds of technologies in this sector, RFID and biometrics, are?
Sure. So a smart gun, which is also known as a personalized gun, is a firearm that's equipped with a safety feature that allows it to be fired only by an authorized user or user using technologies like RFID or biometric recognition that requires a user to authenticate before firing. And what this does is by ensuring that the firearm is used only by the authorized user, that can help to prevent accidental shootings, suicides, gun thefts, and criminal usage by people who are not authorized to use the guns. We are seeing two main types of technology that are being used in smart gun or gun safety solutions. The first one being biometric, which most people are extremely familiar with. It's the same technology that we have on our phones. Uses a fingerprint. The fingerprint technology is getting more sophisticated, so it does tend to read it better on these devices than on your smartphone, although water and dirt can be problematic. But basically, it reads your fingerprint and identifies you, basically verifies your personal identity, and then it basically unlocks the device. Then you've got RFID, which is radio frequency identification. This is where a radio chip is placed in the gun handle or the device, and then a corresponding chip is placed in either a ring, a bracelet, or a watch. And when the two chips are close to each other, then the gun will fire or the lock will unlock. But if they're separated by distance, then you cannot fire a firearm. And this is technology that everybody's really familiar with. It's the same technology that's used, for example, in a key fob to unlock a car door. You know, you've got to be close enough to your car when you hit the button to unlock the door. So it's the same concept.
So what problems can these smart or personalized firearms solve, and how do they go about solving them?
So we view this is not the, you know, a panacea for reducing all types of gun violence. Most likely, these types of solutions won't reduce mass shootings or crime, but the big impact will be around reducing youth suicides. What most people don't realize that when you look at the numbers behind gun violence, 2/3 of all gun deaths are actually suicides. And approximately 3,000 of those suicides are youth suicides that happen every year. And a large percentage of those suicides, young people use about 70% use a family member's gun. So if you had a firearm in a home that had this type of technology that only authenticated to, let's say, a parent, then a child could not use the gun for suicide. It will also prevent unintentional deaths, especially among kids. There are about 2,000 unintentional deaths every year and thousands of injuries. And this is, you know, things that you would never think would happen to you. This is where a little girl reached in her grandmother's purse to pull out some candy, instead pulled out a gun and shot herself. Or the parent who keeps their gun underneath their pillow and the child gets into bed and finds the gun and shoots himself. I mean, the stories go on and they're unbelievably tragic and highly preventable. And so again, these types of technologies would prevent those types of tragic deaths and accidents. And additionally, they would disrupt the market for stolen guns. So every year, somewhere between 250,000 and 500,000 guns are stolen, and 80% are never recovered. So a large number of those end up being used in crimes. And so again, if a gun had either a biometric lock, but especially if it was a personalized gun, they couldn't unlock it and use it for further criminal activities. So those are the types of problems that these technologies could solve.
Wow. Speaking personally to you, how did you get involved in this area? What prompted you to join Smart Tech?
You know, like so many things, it was kind of timing and a fluke. I had spent many years in technology and I was somewhat burnt out. My focus was international, so I spent a lot of time traveling. And I was just ready for a change and I wanted to do something that could potentially have a social impact. And Smart Tech represented an opportunity to leverage my tech background, but also pursue a path that could have a truly meaningful social impact. And I grew up in Texas, so I grew up around guns. I was comfortable with guns. But I really thought that this was just such a no-brainer in leaving Second Amendment in place, not taking away people's guns, but giving gun owners the ability to purchase a gun that had technology embedded into it that it could just make it safer and, you know, prevent it from falling into the wrong hands and creating new types of gun locks and gun safes. So it appealed to the technology side of me and it just appealed to, you know, trying to have an impact on this world and hopefully reduce, you know, some deaths by gun violence in this country. So I was in the right place at the right time, and that's how I got into it.
Well, it's certainly a good thing that you were. What are some products that the Smart Tech Foundation has helped fund and develop, you know, with you working with them?
So we originally gave out $1 million to 15 different innovators. And they were all at different stages of what we call technological readiness. So we gave $10,000 to 5 innovators who basically just had an idea, you know, maybe a business plan, but it was an interesting idea, or there was something very compelling about that innovator. And one of them happened to be a 13-year-old who graduated from the Stanford Online High School. So I'm obviously, you know, I felt that was quite relevant. I was quite proud. And she's gone on to Williams and Mary, and she's still working on this. So that's, you know, she's no longer 13. She's, you know, I guess, gosh, 7 years. So she's pushing 20. And she was one of our innovators. And then we gave $50,000 to 5 innovators who were developing a prototype of their solution. And then 5 innovators got $100,000. And those were people who had working prototypes. And it was everything from biometric gun trigger locks. Then there were gun safes, smart guns themselves, and geofencing solutions, all sorts of different things. And today, I would say of the 15, there are 5 that are 5 plus, and then some new ones who have come into the group that are active. On the trigger lock side, these are devices that really are terrific because trigger locks are not controversial. They don't, you know, change or touch your gun. They just secure it, and they provide a really quick and easy way to secure to keep your gun very accessible. You could have it by your bedside, but it's locked and easily accessible. So there's one solution by 2 law enforcement officers out of Florida, the Gun Guardians, and it's a trigger that lock that slides on the rail of a handgun. And they've also developed one for an AR that prevents the gun from firing without authenticating. I think right now they're still in a mechanical stage. They haven't finalized the biometric, but they're working on that. So that's the gun guardians. Then we have a gentleman out of Detroit who was actually a auto engineer who had been shot as a child and survived, had children of his own, and felt it was really important to create a solution to further prevent children from being injured by guns. And so he developed a biometric trigger lock. He was the first one to market. It's called Identilock, and it's a fantastic device that fits over the trigger. You authenticate with your finger and it pops right off and you've got access to your firearm. Then we've got a young man named Timio who joined us when he was 17. He was in high school. And he has developed what I think is one of the coolest gun safes. It looks like it's a cross between a holster and a gun safe. So it attaches, you can put it on your bedside table. The barrel of the gun kind of fits as in a, like you would put it in a holster. But when you go to take it out, your thumb goes on the biometric scanner and unlocks it. And you pull it out just like you would out of your holster. And that's called, that's Reach and the company's Bar of Safety. And they're in the market now. You can go to their website and see that solution. And in terms of smart guns, probably the most famous, so to speak, of all of our innovators, he's gotten incredible press. He's a Forbes 30 under 30 innovator, and his name's Kai Klopfer, and his company is called BioFire. And he is developing a biometric personalized gun. And he's by far the farthest along of anybody out there who's developing, who's working on smart gun technology. He is definitely the poster child, I think, for the work that we've done. So if you Google Kai Klopfer, he's all over the place. Because he's young and he's brilliant and he's articulate. And, you know, I actually think it's your generation that will have a huge impact on moving these technologies forward. So that's a sample of some of the innovators that we funded.
That's so fantastic that you were able to start it and fund them. And once again, it's really so incredible that one of the innovators went to my high school. So this really feels like something that's a very, very much, you know, a modern technology, a relatively recent creation. Speaking now on the future, what kinds of personalized firearms might be developed in the future and we see later on?
One of the best people to ask would probably be Kai, but I do think there are some, I've talked to an innovator who's looking at AI, facial recognition. There's supposedly some proprietary technology being developed that's out of Switzerland that's still kind of top secret. But as we know, technology moves so quickly. You know, the product life cycles, you know, when I look back when we started this 7 years ago, the technology has definitely advanced at a pretty rapid rate. So I think, you know, for right now, yes, we're seeing RFID and fingerprint biometric, but we could easily have facial recognition and other things that, you know, I don't even have a clue of what's being developed that we don't know about, but I'm optimistic that we'll see some things out there in the next few years that could help accelerate these solutions forward.
Speaking on the timeline, as you brought up, what is this timeline for smart guns? When did they enter the market? When did they begin to enter the market? And what is the path towards the widespread adoption of smart gun or personalized technologies look like?
Believe it or not, the first talk about technology, about smart guns, was about 20 years ago, 1999, 2000. The Clinton administration talked to Smith and Wesson about developing smart guns. It was part of a settlement. And so they were going to develop them. And Colt had actually started developing them, but essentially the NRA essentially called for a boycott that almost put them both out of business. And so that stopped all development of smart guns at that time. Then we had another innovator, Jonathan Mossberg, who started to develop his RFID gun, gosh, now it's probably well over 15 years ago. And he still has it. He still hopes to raise money to develop it. So they have definitely been around for a while, but I actually think we will see a smart gun come to market hopefully within the next 3 years. It may be more like five, but I don't think it's, you know, 20 years off. I think that, again, with the advancement of technologies, I think younger generations are comfortable with technology. And so when you think about adoption of these technologies, like who's going to buy them, I think, you know, it breaks down to a few different groups, but it's definitely early adopters of technology. And that can be people of any age. It's not necessarily young people. But let's face it, you know, younger people have grown up with technologies their whole life. And so you may not be as worried about using something that has embedded technology as someone who's older, who's come to it later in life, and they're concerned, you know, it's not going to work, you know, something's going to happen. And so I think, and I don't think the, you know, you've got your early adopters who will, you know, step up and have shown interest in the technologies. You'll have families who really want to have a firearm that has these safety features in them. And it, you know, it may not be their only firearm in the house, but it might be the firearm that they want to like keep out of the safe that's has quick and easy access, but their kids can't get a hold of. And I also think it'll be like technology geeks, quite frankly. You know, I think there's that whole segment of the market who just wants the latest and greatest and wants to try out the technology. However, this is just my opinion, it will be law enforcement. Law enforcement they are not known as early adopters of anything, let alone technology. They went kicking and screaming when Glocks were introduced. So to think that, you know, their Glocks will be replaced by a smart gun anytime soon, I think is a stretch. But we do feel that it's really important to have law enforcement test them, try them out, and endorse them at least, even if they don't widely use them. But I do think organizations like private security firms, court officers, people who are in courtrooms, other, you know, university police, areas where you have concern for someone getting your service weapon, I think those people are potentially early adopters, you know, earlier in the cycle of who might adopt these technologies.
Gotcha. That is fascinating. I think a common fear of smart guns is that they will be hackable or prone to malfunction, I think, as you addressed. And so are those fears well-founded? Is there something to that idea?
Well, I think anybody who's owned any sort of technology, including a smartphone, knows that technology does not work 100% of the time. I'd like to, Nate, give me an example of something that has never failed. So to assume that a smart firearm is going to be 100%, you know, work 100% of the time is unrealistic. You don't expect traditional guns that have been around for forever jam, misfire, they're not 100% reliable. So I think smart guns have to be held at the same levels of safety standards that traditional guns are held to. And believe me, our innovators are not going to be anxious in introducing a firearm that isn't reliable. So in my opinion, I think it's not those claims are unwarranted, but they're unrealistic. You know, anything that technology has technology in it potentially can fail. And in terms of being hacked, the United States government was just hacked by the Russians. So I'm sure you could hack a smart gun if you really wanted to, but your average so-called criminal who's going to break into your house to steal it, probably top of mind isn't going to be hacking your smart gun. And I don't mean to trivialize things, but I don't think, you know, I hear that, but I just don't think that's worth really commenting on.
Understood. Yes. How has the wider firearms industry treated personalized guns? You mentioned Smith & Wesson earlier, but but generally, how have they treated it in organizations like yours, and especially today?
They've steered clear of it. They don't want anything to do with it for the most part, because I believe, and I don't know this, I've reached out to all of them, and none of them have ever returned a phone call or an email or a piece of mail. I think this is because of what happened to Smith & Wesson. They don't want to be boycotted. They are not, this is not an industry of that embraces technology. I mean, look at their firearms. They haven't innovated in decades. I mean, they have in small ways, but nothing significant. And you would think this would be a great opportunity to expand their business. You know, they need a younger audience. You would think having a new gun that has this cool technology in it, they'd want to introduce into the market because it would attract a new buyer. Women are a huge growth segment for them, and women would be attracted to buying a smart gun because, one, we are worried about our children, so we want to make sure our children are protected. So to have a smart gun in the house would appeal to a lot of women. And also, owning a firearm as a woman, you are worried that you could be overpowered by someone stronger than you are and have your firearm used against you. So if it was a smart gun, that would never happen. So these types of guns really could appeal to women. So you look at the firearm industry from a business standpoint and you say, what's wrong with you guys? Like, this is a business opportunity. But, you know, again, I don't know this to be true, but my sense is they just don't want to go there because they're not willing to put their business at risk. And so my sense is what will happen is when a smart gun, one of these innovators brings a smart gun to market and proves there's a business there, then they will follow. But they are not, in my opinion, they will never lead.
Understood. Yes. Could you explain the very infamous New Jersey law concerning smart firearms technologies and what impact that law had on this whole industry and field?
Sure. So it's called the New Jersey Childproof Handgun Law, and it was passed in 2002 by a senator who was incredibly well-intentioned. She felt strongly that guns should be kept away from children, and so she passed what was called, again, the New Jersey Childproof Handgun Law, that stated that when a handgun came to the market with smart technology, so when a smart gun was introduced into the market, all handguns in the state of New Jersey had to be a smart gun within 3 years. And so that, although well-intentioned, it was probably the worst thing that could have happened, or one of the worst things that could have happened to smart gun development, because the NRA went crazy because they didn't want anyone legislating what kind of firearm you should and could own. And so there was huge blowback on this for years and years and years. And, you know, I do believe it hindered investment in our innovators, and people just didn't want to go there. In 2019, the governor of New Jersey, Governor Murphy, finally signed a bill into law, which essentially amended it. And it replaced it with a more neutral statement that said, that firearms dealers in the state of New Jersey had to offer one for sale, which is pretty benign, but it's still in, I think it would, ideally, we were hoping they would just repeal the whole thing and make it go away. This is better, but the NRA still says, you know, it's the slippery slope, you know, discussion that, you know, that they still want to mandate smart guns. So it hasn't been good for the development of smart guns.
Gotcha. Yeah. How unfortunate.
Yeah.
Finally, speaking to a younger audience, how do you see smart firearms technologies affecting policies and people in the future? I know you've mentioned how involved young people are in this field. What can young people do if they want to support and create change in safer weapons technology?
Ooh, good question. Well, because so many of the innovators that I've been working with have been young, I just believe, like so many things in this country today, that you all can have a true impact on the development of these technologies and so many other critical issues that we don't even need to discuss today. We'll stay focused. But again, I think, you know, you grew up with these technologies, you don't have a fear of technology. It's great to, you know, if you have a desire to learn more about them, I can put you in touch with any of our innovators, but especially, you know, the younger ones, to understand their journey. And also, you know, to speak out when you have an opportunity, or to support organizations if you believe in their mission, whether it's, you know, March for Our Lives, or, you know, there's so many organizations that, you know, that support. What I always felt was great about our approach is that we walk the middle line. There's no judgment. It's not we agree or disagree with whether or not you own a firearm, or, you know, if there should be firearms. We just think realistically, firearms are here in this country. 1 in 3 homes in this country has a firearm. So let's just make them safer. And so, you know, I think as the young people get older and can vote and have, you know, more of a say, I think these technologies stand a much better chance of coming to market. I think the people who are so opposed to them, generally speaking, not, you know, always exceptions to the rule, tend to be older, tend to not welcome change. So I think you all have could play a significant role in seeing these weapons not only come to market, but be successful in the market. And I encourage, you know, if anyone has any questions, especially of Chloe, who's one of, you know, yours, I'm happy to put, you know, anyone in touch with her.
Thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast, Margo. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.